Greater Santon and beyond. Get ready for the Santon Times Hour.
With your host,
Alexander.
Ladies and gentlemen, everyone in between and beyond, this is the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8 and also available on all good digital audio platforms. I'm Alexander Leipner and this is a best of edition, volume 2, mind you. We're going to be recapping some of the great interviews we've had over the past year. And as always, I encourage you to get in touch and send through your questions, your comments, or your feedback. And you can do so using the email address, editor@santontimes.co.za, or visit the social media accounts at Santon Times, or connect on the website, www.santontimes.co.za. And a very special warm welcome to everyone listening for the very first time. And of course, our regular listeners, it's always good to have you be part of the Santon Times Hour Nation in Johannesburg and Pretoria, across South Africa, anywhere and everywhere else in the world, of course, online or on air, wherever you are. I'm happy to report that all is well in Santonland. And Vincenzo and I are enjoying the long weekend and the public holidays just as much as you are, I hope. And I thought, why not bring back some of the great chats we've had on the Santon Times Hour over the past year, blended with some good music. And as you see, in a new week, and wrap up what was hopefully a great Easter weekend. And I'm sure you made the best of it. I think I had way too many chocolates and maybe a little bit too much relaxing this weekend. But thank you to Santon City for sending me a chocolate hamper full of cocoa goodies. And I'm not sure if it's always a good thing to have these things standing around the house for too long, because needless to say, they end up not lasting very long and they do nothing for your waistline. But what a treat. And I hope you got to spend some time with your family, with friends. Maybe you got a chance to get away out of town, which is always a great thing to do when there's a bit of a break. I think there's also school holidays as well. So hopefully it's been a most memorable, memorable time. And I do think we still have a couple of more long weekends up ahead. So maybe you are pacing yourself and you've decided not to go away for Easter, yet stay in Santonland. And maybe you're planning a trip later on. Well, if you're traveling back, if you're traveling away, well, travel safe. And hopefully you also get a chance to listen to the show at a later stage on one of the digital audio platforms as you take a road trip. So coming up on this week's show, a little bit different. As Australian Survivor returns to our screens for yet another season, I was reminded of a chat I had with the game's most iconic player, who released a book late last year on improving your social survival skills. That's coming up shortly. And she was Nelson Mandela's personal chef for many years and released not one, but two cookbooks. And I sat down with her to recap the life and times and dishes of Madiba. As mentioned, it's the best of the Santon Times Hour this week, volume 2, but there's no reason to not marry some great talk with some good music, so let's rewind the clock to kick off the hour with some Jamiroquai and Love Philosophy, right here on the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8.
Show some love.
Subscribe. Share.
Leave a review and rating for the Santon Times Hour
on your favorite podcast app now.
Follow the Santon Times on social media.
At Santon Times.
This is the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8 and available on all good digital audio platforms, including some new ones, believe it or not. We're expanding and growing, and not just from Easter chocolates, mind you. Now, I'm particularly thrilled to be chatting to my next guest. He joins me all the way from Australia. He captivated audiences who are big Survivor fans, and I think he sort of permeated beyond the borders of Australian Survivor. But if you did watch Australian Survivor, not once, maybe twice, you would have caught a contestant. He was fondly named King George of Bankstown by his fans, I think was the self-proclaimed, a character that absolutely shone on the show and managed to make his way through the most difficult situations. He's now releasing a book this week, and I'm thrilled to be joined by George Mladenov from Australia. And George, it's great to have you on the Santon Times Hour.
Thank you so much, Alex, and sending you big hugs and kisses from Bankstown. How are you?
George, I'm fantastic, and thank you so much. And George, knowing your strategic mind, I'm worried to take that compliment right off the bat.
No, look, I am so grateful for all of the South African fans of Survivor, and I am acutely aware of just how passionate everyone in South Africa is about Survivor, and more broadly, because I know that Australian Survivor is, I think, airing right now on DSTV as well and a few other countries in the region as well. So the fact that Survivor's made such an impact on the other side of the world and in the Southern Hemisphere is it's very pleasing, and really delighted to be doing my first South African interview in 3 years as well. So thank you for having me.
Tremendous. Well, I'm thrilled to have you on the show. And George, just kick off with this entire Survivor section of your life, because you come from a legal background, you come from a political background. What drove you to enter a reality TV show like Survivor in Australia?
Well, when I reflect back, like, I'd watched probably the first 30 American seasons, like a lot of people around the world had. And when Australian Survivor got relaunched in 2016, that was the period of my life when I was the chief of staff to a member of the New South Wales Parliament. And I think I was just too busy in terms of my work life to just even think of applying. So long story short, I think I'd made a decision to kind of move from being a political staffer to the public sector, and I found a better work-life balance in my life. And then season 4 of Australian Survivor was on TV, and I just literally saw one of the ads that said apply, and I went, why haven't I done this yet? So I did, and then I suppose the rest of it is history. I mean, we did have the COVID pandemic in between, but it was just a dream come true as a Survivor fan, and then now my life's completely changed, and I couldn't be more thankful.
It's tremendous. And I mean, like I said, you really added a different flavor to the show. I mean, we'd seen a lot of notable contestants across the entire Survivor universe, starting in the United States and obviously spreading across the world. And there's some well-known names for those people who've watched the show ongoingly. But you just added a whole different layer of complexity and skill to the game. And I think what made your season so interesting was the fact that you'd had really gotten yourself into some really difficult positions. And when I say difficult, for the average Survivor player, you would say, well, you know what, this guy's not going to make it past the next tribal council, he's going to get voted out, there's no way that somebody who stands out that way or who said those things will ever move on. And somehow you always managed to manipulate or encourage or motivate the people at that tribal council to vote for everyone except yourself. How did you do that?
How did I do that? It's all in my book. So I think that is the kind of whole kind of like instigator of my book, because a lot of people have those questions. And the short answer is I went out there and I was myself. And very fortunately for me, it made very good TV and it kind of worked in that Survivor setting. But it worked in that Survivor setting and in the other TV shows that I've done as well here in Australia, for a few reasons upon reflection, and I kind of delve into it in the various chapters in my book. So in terms of my kind of like personal context, the very boring side of me is I got admitted as a solicitor, I finished my law degree, but then I got snapped up by my old MP boss and I started working in her office. And when you work in that political space, not just as a staffer, but I had I was active in a political party for over 10 years as well in Australia. I kind of learnt the machinations of politics and deal cutting and working out motivation and intention and priorities and things like that. But from a different perspective, I was involved in like a litany of kind of like community groups. I was the treasurer and vice president of a semi-professional soccer club for about 10 or 12 years as well. I was on the board of a licensed club, and I was, you know, when you combine all of that kind of like life experience with my other side hustle and passion, which is poker, where you learn to back your instinct and your judgment and to take risks at the right time and to apply pressure, it all kind of turned into a very good Survivor game. And I do go into kind of like the various different kind of tactics you can take in different situations in my book. In terms of winning friends, in terms of manipulating people to steer in the right direction or to skew the odds in your favor. And like that, what I enjoyed about the process of writing my book as well was it gave me the chance to kind of collate it all together in a cohesive way, which is entertaining, which is in a storytelling fashion, so it'll be easy to digest as well. But I want people to find their kind of like their loyal allies, to work out what is important in a situation and what isn't, to back themselves and their judgment, to work out the odds, and then to take risks. Because if you do all of that, not only, you know, for me was it an interesting Survivor season and a great game, and thank you for all your compliments as well, I really appreciate it, but like in every single setting in your life, in your local community, wherever you are in the world, and to all your listeners in South Africa as well, you will be able to make the most of every situation. And that's what my book is about, basically. It's sharing my knowledge through storytelling in an entertaining fashion to give people the tools that they need to skew the odds in their favor.
I'm in conversation with Australian Survivors King George about his new book, How to Win Friends and Manipulate People, a guidebook for getting your way. We're taking a quick break. More after this.
Follow the Santon Times on... You're listening to the Santon Times Hour. Online. On air.
Anywhere. Anytime.
This is the Santon Times Hour.
This is the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8 and available on all good digital audio platforms. I'm in conversation with Australian Survivors King George. Well, let's get the name of the book there. It's called How to Win Friends and Manipulate People, a guidebook for getting
very
your way.
Very original.
Yes. I was saying, a fun play on the Dale Carnegie How to Make Friends and Influence People, but a bit of a tongue-in-cheek title.
Yes.
But, I mean, George, like you said, I mean, there's some really interesting skills. And for somebody who looks at it at face value, you might not see it immediately. But for you, you knew that every conversation and every engagement on the show was crafted. It wasn't just a coincidental, oh, you know, I've got some time to kill, let me chat to this person, or let me, you know, share some food with this person. If you had to pull up an example of a situation where you tactically used some of the skills and some of the things that you illustrate in the book, what would one of those scenarios have been on Australian Survivor?
Well, I think the easiest kind of Survivor example to give, and this is the final chapter in my book in terms of glory or death of how I framed it, which is one of my kind of like Survivor catchphrase as well. It's that episode 7 tribal council, the one that everyone calls the best one ever in worldwide history. And that wasn't just kind of like a situation that evolved itself over the course of one night. It involved so many different moving pieces of the puzzle. And it involved me more than anything else doing three things. I worked out who my people were and why they mattered to me. And for all everyone that was listening, they were Shawnee and Liz on that tribe. I also worked out very early on what someone like Geordie's motivation was in the game. And that was to redeem his flaws from his previous game, which was the fact that everyone thought he was in a man-only alliance and people out there in the fan base and the community didn't like that. So I knew which lever to pull with Geordie. And then I knew also that someone like Simon wanted nothing more than to prove himself and then to be in control. And when I went through the kind of like the process in my mind, I also kind of reflected on, you know, the benefits of being aggressive and applying maximum pressure in certain situations and not, and then provoking reactions. And then you kind of see it all in that 42 minutes of television that they ended up showing on that tribal council, because just so much happened. And more than anything else, I backed myself and I believed in myself and I believed that this was the right thing to do at the right time. And it just so happened to be through the kind of like Survivor TV show element that a few unexpected things happened. And then I took the bull by the, you know, by the horns, and I made it work for me. And sometimes that's just like the story of life. The person that takes their opportunities, that works out the best path forward in multiple different permutations, is the one that gets ahead. And every single kind of like little element that I've just kind of like really gone through quickly with you there is from like a different story or example in my life. And I go through it all in my book. And if you can kind of like work out all those kind of cascading number of factors, you can skew the odds in your favor. And in that kind of tribal council setting, I did it. And it was, you know, it's fun watching it back. And everyone calls it the best tribal council ever in the world. And frankly, it was. And, you know, I was delighted to do it.
Well, listen, I certainly got to a point on this on two seasons where I said, well, if you get voted out, I don't even know if it's worth watching the show anymore, because it was just so engaging and so entertaining. And I think at the same time, what also made you such a likable character on the show was the fact that you also owned your personality, and you were very confident, if not cocky, about some of the situations, to the point where some people might have said, you know what, this guy, I can't watch him anymore because he irritates me so much. And at the same time, you probably had people who said, listen, I have to carry on watching this because I love this guy so much.
Yeah, and I think sometimes it comes down to context and life and upbringing. And I think that kind of like directness, where I'm from in Western Sydney, that's kind of like very normal where, you know, you take people at face value and you either like them or you don't. And it's that kind of dichotomy is something that I was used to being involved in the political scene as well. But I think South Africans in general have that kind of like frankness as well. And maybe that's why I've got like a much larger South African following than I would have thought, having been on an Australian TV show. But like what it all boils down to is kind of like understanding yourself. And again, sorry to keep saying it, this is also a chapter in my book. So if you can understand other people's perceptions of you, then that gives you a real kind of like advantage in terms of trying to work out their next steps. And people would always say it to me, whether I was out and about at functions or in the community or kind of like online on social media, why was George's plan the one that always worked? And why did people always go with George's plan? Because I always tried to predict the two or three things that people would do. And then I would always readjust my plan kind of around that. And when you have that kind of, A, that self-perception element in terms of what other people are going to think about you in terms of predicting your behavior, but you're kind of doing it at the same time, and you test your assumptions and then you make calculated guesses and then you keep readjusting in real time, things will more often than not go in your way. And that kind of like go-getting attitude is the difference in a situation where you can either strike a deal and it's successful, or you scrap that plan and then you move to plan B. And I was never afraid to do that on Survivor, but I suppose I do that in my life every single day. And, you know, it's just kind of like for the past 10 years, particularly in my professional life before it kind of changed, and now I've kind of worked in the TV industry, but it's just like you're always trying to work out what makes people tick. And what their priorities and their motivations are, and what they're going to rally behind. Are they going to rally behind your flag or someone else's? And what I also did, particularly more so on my first season of Survivor, is I always had a kind of like us v them mentality, or red v blue, if you're going to use that kind of like political, you know, analogy, where I found my people and that was enough. And then we have a different kind of like election system in terms of Australia, our Westminster system. But you don't need to, I always told myself, I don't need to have the majority to be in control. I just need to have enough of a block of my own people. And then that's enough. And then if I can strike a deal with some of the other divided people, then that also will be enough. And it always kind of worked. Sometimes right at the last minute, sometimes it was risky, sometimes, you know, things went my way, but that's life. And, you know, that's having foresight. And the benefit of it is it made great TV, and I had a lot of fun doing it.
Absolutely. We had a lot of fun watching it. George Mladenov, also known as King George of Bankstown, famous for Australian Survivor. Now he has a book called How to Win Friends and Manipulate People, a guidebook for getting your way. Check it out this week as it gets released. George, it's been such a pleasure having you on the Santon Times Zone. Thank you for making the time.
Thank you so much for having me. I really want to get out to South Africa soon, so maybe I can do it next year.
Well, listen, you're certainly up for a coffee, if not a tribal council with me. We'll definitely catch up when you're here. Please let me know. We're going to take a quick musical break, and more of the Santon Times Hour right after this.
always mix. 93.8. Music you love on Mix 93.8.
Back for more?
The Santon Times Hour continues.
You're listening to the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8 with Ray Dalton with Do It Again. My name is Alexander Leipner, and you know how this works. If you listen to the show regularly or you're listening for the very first time, well, welcome to you and welcome to the Santon Times Hour. If there's anything that sounded good on the show that you heard that you can't quite remember the names or the details, well, we try and put up the details up on the website under show notes for this particular episode. And you can do so by visiting www.santontimes.co.za and get a detailed breakdown of everything discussed on this week's edition. Also, be sure to check out the social media accounts and follow those at Santon Times, and feel free to engage on those with a tweet, a WhatsApp, a DM, a voice note, or whatever else works for you. And you can also use the hashtag Santon Times Hour. A few weeks ago, I had the pleasure of sitting down with Xoliswa Ndoyiya at Sanctuary Mandela in Houghton. And for over 20 years, she was Nelson Mandela's personal chef. And she's now released her second cookbook titled Made with Love, Recipes and Memories from Nelson Mandela's Personal Chef. She started working for Madiba soon after he was released from prison. And this interview for the Santon Times Hour was recorded in Room 1 at Sanctuary Mandela, which has been turned into a boutique hotel. Unbelievable. If you have a chance to go and visit this place, please do so. And Room 1 is called Mr. President, as all of the 9 rooms at the residence are dedicated to one of the decades of Mandela's life. And this particular room was his actual bedroom whilst he lived at the house. And the hospitality team has done an incredible job in capturing moments and artifacts across the property to take a step back in time and help you reflect on his life and presidency. I kicked off my conversation with Xoliswa by asking her how she was feeling at this time.
I've got mixed emotions, I must say. I'm happy, I'm overwhelmed, I'm nervous, but I know that at the end of the day, I am happy about my work.
Where do you think those feelings are coming from right now?
These feelings are coming from that I had served an icon, and then I had come back to a place where I've met him, and all what made me to meet him was all about food. And then I told myself that I will never stop cooking. I will never be a person that says that I've done it, so I cannot be doing it anymore, because I want to keep it going. One of the emotions that I have is that all what is in this book is what I've been telling myself I will do one day. This is a dream come true. And more especially when it's a second book, because my first book did well, but didn't well for me. So I just said to myself, this second book is my book, it's my baby, and then I'm going to look after it.
Well, let's rewind the clock a bit to the time when you met Nelson Mandela. How did you become a chef? How did this entire journey start?
It's a long journey. It's a long story. And if I had to start by saying that it has been a very generous and a very special journey that I had with Dada, and to serve him and to make sure that I contributed more, especially not only in his life as a chef, but to many people that they were surrounding him, like family, like friends and comrades and everybody, even the presidents of most of the countries. So what I can say, the day that I met Dada, I never thought I was coming to meet Dada in this house. A friend of mine who believed in me and trusted me in my cooking is the one who made this dream to come true for me. Gloria, that the lady that I came back from home with, Queenstown, she just told Dada that she would like to work with me, and then she made a plan that I will have to go and meet with her at Shell House, which it was the ANC headquarters by then. And I went there to go and meet Gloria, but surprisingly, a guy came to pick me up because I had told Gloria what I'm wearing. And from nowhere, she just changed that. I cannot make it on time. I'm sending somebody to pick you up. Only to find out the guy that is picking me up is the guy who is taking me to the office. So when I got there, I got into a room full of guys and with a black and white suits, and they were not promising with their smiles, but they were intimidating to my surprise, and if I can say that. But then when I greeted them, they said to me, we know that you are here to meet Gloria, but can we talk to you? Then this was a boardroom. That's what was surprising me. But the questions that were coming from them, like asking me my name, my clan name, where do I come from, where I am, what am I doing, that was surprising because I didn't know. I was expecting Gloria to see Gloria. Then they said to me, tell us if it may happen that you had to get a job and to cook for an icon, be it a South African or an international icon, what would you do? Then I said to them, I'm not job hunting. I wasn't hunting for a job by then. Then they said to me, no, we understand that. But Sis Gloria said to us, we can ask you that because we had already asked Sis Gloria about the same question. But all what we can say to you, what if we can have a better offer for you? Oh, yes, I said, if there's a better offer, then I can cook for the icon. Up to the time, let me fast forward it, and I had to go with this guy after they had asked me one question, and I think that that's the question. That day, I thought that that's the question that got me this job, that they asked me, tell us, if something happens, somebody comes into your kitchen, you are cooking, someone comes and interrupts you or distracts you in what you are doing, what will you do? I said, there's no way that I will even leave my pots with anybody. I will be there until I save. They put their pants down. They went outside to take a smoke. I even think of them coming back, smiling, saying that she's the right one. And I didn't know why am I the right one. So they said to me, somebody's coming to pick you up. And the guy that picked you up from downstairs is taking you to Gloria for real now. I came with this guy. I came to this house. And he asked me a very nasty question, smiling at me, saying that, Sissy, you don't even know me, but you're jumping into a car with somebody that you don't even know. What if I'm going to kill you? Then I even answered, honestly, I said, but I'm not a threat to you. So he just laughed. We came here. As we were coming here, this house was full of black cars and with people with black and white suits. Then I was asking myself, what is going on now? I don't see Gloria still. But when we go to the kitchen that is the same kitchen that we are using here, I saw Gloria. And then Gloria said to me, hi, friend. And then when I just wanted to jump on here and greet her and hug her, this guy said, no. So slow later, he took me inside. We had to walk. I had to follow him. I saw just straight in front of me, there were glass doors. I saw Tata Mandela sitting there. I couldn't move. I just standing still. I was stunned. I didn't know what to do. All what was happening, I was shaking. My hands were shaking. I was asking myself, am I seeing him? Is this him? But that came into my mind. I was told about the icon. Must this be the icon that I was told about? But still, I was still shaking. But until he saw me, because he was watching news from the TV, he saw me and then he stood up. And he opened the door. He just stretched his hand and he greeted me. He could feel that my hands are still shaking. He said to me, do you know this man? And I think that was the way of trying to calm it down. And I said, yes, that I know him. He said, where do you know him? I said, him jokingly, I said to him, I know him from TV, radio, newspaper. I said, well then, this is the man you're seeing on TV. Don't be scared. And I was shaking still, but he showed me the chair in his lounge and he said to me, sit down. Ask me my name, my clan name again. And then he said to me, I know that you are coming from Eastern Cape, but I was told that you are a great cook. Do you think we can cook our own home food? I didn't hesitate because now my mind was saying, this is the icon that I was called for. I didn't hesitate. I just said, yes, Dada. Then from there, for me now, knowing Dada, when the years were going by, serving him, that answer of saying yes immediately was the best answer because all what I could see him, if somebody is not sure of himself or somebody that doesn't mean anything when you're answering him, he just know that you're not sure. So he said to me, it's okay. You've got a job. And that was it. That's the day I met him.
I mean, where do you even begin putting together a menu? I mean, he really gave you a bit of an indication that he wanted home-cooked meals, meals that he knew from the Eastern Cape. What did that look like?
I don't think he was meaning from the Eastern Cape meals. But I think he was thinking that at home, you know what to cook at home. We are not at the restaurant. We are not anywhere. But here at home, what do we eat? And then I know exactly what to do. Where this thing come from of cooking comes back. When I say coming back from home, I was just the first girl from my mother. And then I had to do all the cookings at home before my sister grows up. And then coming to serve him and to know that what am I going to cook every day was one of the challenges. Because now I have to know that I'm cooking for somebody. And this person is this person that everybody would like to see him in a health way. But looking at Tata every day, he was a very health conscious person. So my cooking was starting from home, knowing very well how to cook at home. But the best was not for me to know what to put with what until I told myself that I want to take this thing up. So when I came here, I knew already what I had to do. But thinking about the book, it was something that I've never thought of. But I had a dream of saying one day I will have a cookbook. Knowing from reading the newspapers or the magazines, I've been telling myself I have a dream of having a book. Come Christmas one day, the foundation had sent Anna Trapido, who is an author as well. She was doing Hunger for Freedom, going to all the people, searching for people who have been cooking for Tata for many years, and after when he was in prison and after the prison. But she came to me because the foundation had to send her to me because I was the one who was present that time. So when she came to ask me about the dishes, and I said to her, Anna, I can give you some of the recipes, some of the dishes, but I have a dream. And she said, what is your dream? And I told her that I would love to have a cooking book one day. She said, here I am. Use me. I will help you. I will do all the writing for you. Then you can do all your recipes. That's when it started. I didn't know that I would be author of the cooking books, but thanks to that woman, because she made me sure that you can be an author of a cooking book. And then I started from that day.
And tremendous. And here we are as the second book is lined up almost 10 years later from the first one. What are some of the dishes that people can find in this book? Are they some of the dishes that you cooked for Nelson Mandela way back when?
Oh, yes. Most of them, I've been using them to cook at the house because that's where all my life was. You can remember that I've been there for 22 years with the family. So there was no way that I would have anything hidden behind. But all what I was saying to people when I have the book is that I hide nothing. I'm cooking. That is why I have to share my books because I want people to know what was that I was eating. What was my family foremost? That was I was cooking for them when I have to be at home with my children and my family. So these are the recipes that when I'm given the money for them, for the petty cash, I will take the money and I will go and take and get the ingredients. I'll come home and I will think of myself, what am I doing with this? I've bought this. What am I doing with it? How am I cooking it? I'll cook it and I'll write down. But the only thing that I was making sure is that when I cook it, let me test it with them at the family house, at the Mandela house. When the plates are coming out clean, that's when I said, this is my next recipe. Then that's how I started piling up my recipes.
And I believe Tata Madiba used to also insist that you would come along sometimes for his trips to cook for him. Is that right?
Oh, yes. I used to travel with him most of the places. I used to travel with him up until one story that I can tell you. There was a day that there was a time that I couldn't go with him. It was a short trip for him, and he was going to London. And then when he got there, because I thought he was going to be there for 4 or 5 days, so when he got there, they called me to say, where are you? Because I was thinking of going to my children, and I had already booked my ticket to go to Eastern Cape because I know he's not around. As I was in the bus on my way to Queenstown, I got a call from Zelda saying that, Aish, where are you? I said, I'm on my way to home. I said, please make sure you do a turn back. Why? Madiba now is telling us no, he doesn't want to communicate with us, doesn't want to say anything, doesn't want to do any of the jobs that he was supposed to come and do here. So I thought it was a joke. I said to Zelda, no, don't play with me. He said, no, please go back to Joburg. And the meal was just a creamery meal with sour milk. That was the meal that I was supposed to come back and cook and send it to London. I came back, I cooked it, and I had to parcel it up and wrap it up nicely. But I was with Sistoko, who was that as a personal assistant at home. So we had to wrap it up, then we had to write outside that president's medication. And that's how the dish had to go, because it was illegal to send cooked food to another country. So that's how you couldn't take away data from who he was, because that was the meal that I know when he's at home, he feels comfortable. That's what comforts him.
Madiba was also not a big dessert person, is that right?
No, he wasn't. More especially when it comes to sweets and chocolate things and all these things, because he will hammer to us that feed the children the fruit, just only the fruit sugar must come out of it, not anything like dessert so sweet with sugar. And then, but from one day, we were so surprised when he delved into the children's dessert, and then that was malva pudding. And that's when he started to eat the sweet things. And that's when he goes out to go and eat an ice cream. That was surprisingly, because as he was growing older now, we could see him that he's asking for that ice cream, double toffee ice cream.
What are some of your favorite recipes in this book, Made with Love?
Oh, well, yeah, Made with Love. And you know, when I cook that oxtail, and I know that he used to call his guest whenever I want to I want to dodge him, not to cook the meal, because he's been eating for a long time. So when I don't want to cook it, he will just ask Mr. Kathrada, Kathy Ahmed, say, do you want to come to my house? Because he wants me to cook, because he knows Mr. Kathrada loves oxtail stew and semp and beans. So that's when he will get a chance. That oxtail, I had to cook it 3 times in a week. So if I don't do that, I'll be called on the table. Even if there are guests who say, why are you not feeding me well? So that's the dish that I will tell you that I love that dish.
Well, I'm certainly going to be trying it once I take the book home, and it'll be some oxtail for the coming months. You know, the great thing about cooking, about Nelson Mandela, I mean, it's such a great combination, are the stories, these amazing stories that you have. And I'm going to ask you if you've got one more story for us to share with your time cooking for Nelson Mandela.
Oh, yeah, I had this meal, that breakfast. This is a breakfast porridge that I used to cook for him. And the reason why I had to come up with the years that I cooked for him is that porridge, when he just wanted to change from nowhere, then I had to ask. I've been cooking this dish for 18 years for Dada. He has never said anything, has never changed to it. This is a porridge that when we eat it with pap. But him, he wants to eat it with milk, fresh milk, hot milk, with sultana and raisins as his sugar, then the nuts, macadamia nuts, then the mixed nuts. So I've been serving this porridge for all these 18 years. But one day, Dada decided, me knowing him with sugar, he decided that he's going to delve into the most sugar-coated cereal. Then this is a Frosties. And I found him eating this with the grandchildren. And as I was bringing the porridge, he looked at me and I look at him and I asked the grandchildren, what are you doing to grandpa? Then they didn't answer. Then he looked at me and said, no, darling, don't worry. I'm just tasting. It's just a taste. I thought it was a taste. Come the following day, I found him doing the same thing, being early on the table so that he can go for that porridge. And then now I had to say, no, Dada, no, now. This is not going to be right. Dada, why are you doing this to me? Because medics, the doctors, will just fight with me, because we know that he had to be checked every morning before he goes for his breakfast, that his sugar levels, everything is fine. So now I ask him, that why are you doing this to me? He said, no, I'm not doing this to make you feel bad, darling. But I went straight to the grandchildren. I said, are you guys the ones that are taking this, they're telling Tata to eat this? So they all answered me, no, mama. It's not us, it's grandpa himself. And he said, Goli, come sit down, because now you could see that I'm putting the children into the point. Come sit down here. I sat next to him. He said to me, Goli, I must tell you this. I think I've honored my mother enough. Wow. That touched me very badly, because I didn't know that all these years I was serving him this porridge, I was representing the mother. So it went deeper to what I thought, because he said to me, gave me the lecture of, Goli, I grew up eating this porridge. My mother used to cook it for me. I came to Johannesburg looking for greener pastures. I became a lawyer. I went to prison. I lost my mother's touch with food for many years. Coming out of prison, my mother was not there, and I didn't bury my mother. This is the reason why I had to feel closer to my mother, because of this dish that I know she used to cook it for me. So then I felt, wow, that was too strong, but I didn't know that it was deeper like that to him. But when I looked at him, I could feel that he was doing this just to say sorry to his mother, that I couldn't even bury you, but I've eaten this enough. But I thought that was enough and that was the last day. But he said to me, no, I'll still go back to my porridge, but I wanted to taste this. And for real, he went back to his porridge.
That was my conversation with Goliswa Nduyiya on the occasion of her latest cookbook titled Made with Love, Recipes and Memories from Nelson Mandela's Personal Chef. And if you get a chance to go to Sanctuary Mandela for a meal, which I do encourage you to do, and I see they're also part of Restaurant Week. So if you enjoy Restaurant Week, make sure you check that out and you can go and experience that. Make sure you say hello to Goliswa. She's often in the kitchen and she makes the most remarkable food, and she also has the most fantastic stories, as you've obviously heard. You'll also notice that each of the wines on the wine list at Sanctuary Mandela, well, they also have a personal connection and a personal story to Madiba. And also many of the staff at Sanctuary Mandela have also been had a chance to share some moments with him and also tell some personal stories, which is really remarkable. So make it an afternoon. If you go for a lunch or a breakfast, make sure you put a couple of hours aside to really explore this place. And there's also the bench on which he sat regularly and read the newspaper every afternoon, and that's still there. as well as meeting rooms and moments that were critical in shaping South Africa. And if you need some food for the soul and for the body, well, please go visit there. And I must say, the oxtail stew comes highly recommended, and it was one of Madiba's favorite dishes. It's time for a quick musical break and more of the Santon Times Hour right after this.
You're listening to the Santon Times Hour. We love music on Mix 93.8.
Thank you, Alex. I love your professionalism, and thank you for having me on.
You're listening to the Santon Times Hour.
This is the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8 and available on all good digital audio platforms with Dua Lipa and Break My Heart. This has been a special week of the Santon Times Hour, a best of Volume 2, recapping some of the most interesting interviews over the past year, and I'm sure we will do it again fairly soon. But for right now, that's all we have time for this week on the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8, and is always available on all good digital audio platforms, including Apple, Amazon, Spotify, you name it. It's all there. Go look for it. You can also email editor@santontimes.co.za, as well as connect on social media @santontimes, and visit the website www.santontimes.co.za. And it's always good to get your feedback, your thoughts, your questions, your comments. Make sure you use any of those platforms to do so. Thank you to you for your ongoing listening support, as well as the teams behind the scenes that make all of this happen every single week. You do not go unnoticed. Let's wrap up the show this week, and that's to play out with The Kungs and Never Going Home. Thank you for listening, and let's do it all again next week.